It's said to be able to resonate between 7 megahertz and 450 megahertz. And it has a 1/4-inch camera tripod stud at the base so that you can kind of get a tripod hooked into it.
Where the antenna has a tunable loading coil at the base, and maybe that's remotely operatable, it sounds to me like it has a little bit of the characteristics of a so-called screwdriver antenna. Is that a good guess, Roy? AC2GS, K2LIW?
Fortunately, I don't think it's an automatic. It's a purely manual. You have to get to go there. Either you get a tuner externally for it, or you have to start tapping the loading coil to get it resonant.
What model antenna are we talking about? ATAS-25, which apparently works between 7 megacycles and 400 megs. Over to you, Eric.
That's the manual version of the Yaesu motorized antenna. I believe it's pretty much the same structure. I hated that antenna. That antenna was garbage. Hate to say it that way, but, you know, you put a decent antenna on the back of your car, or even a Tar Heel compared to that thing, and it's like night and day. It works really average on 2 meters and 440. Put a decent antenna on 2 meters and 440 on your car, and you'll get better results.
So even though where Roy looked it up, and on that rating system, it had 4 stars out of 5, your personal experience with that antenna is that the performance was quite low. In other words, people were not hearing you as well as you think they should hear you. And so did you like it mechanically but not electronically? You probably didn't like the price. Tell us anything more you want to tell us, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LAW.
KE2LAW, K2EJ. I never had the 25. I had the 100 and the 120. And I've compared it with a bunch of other antennas, and we also got a bunch of guys together which had different ones, all working the same station, and everybody gets different results. So, I mean, the antenna works, but I think you can do better.
Now, you didn't have the 25. You had the 100 and the 120. What's different about those? Different bands? Over to you, Eric.
Same bands, same philosophy in terms of how the antenna is put together. The 100 and the 125, rather the 120, is a motorized version of that particular antenna. It's basically a loading coil that moves up and down with the motor.
Now, if the antenna was low in performance electronically, Eric, there's only two ways it can do that. Present a high standing wave ratio, and therefore it's hard to pump power into it, or the components it's made out of are lossy and something gets hot. So do you have reason to believe it was low in efficiency because something was getting hot, or it was hard to get it to give you a good standing wave ratio? If the electrical performance was low, you didn't like the antenna pattern, you didn't like the efficiency, you didn't like the visuar, you didn't like the mechanics. What did you like, what did you not like so much, Eric? Take your time, KE2EJ, K2LIW.
K2LIW, K2EJ. All right, well, specifics I'm not going to get too deep into because, when you line up a bunch of cars and you try to do something off the cuff, you're not doing any kind of good documentation. You also have the experience of using the antenna over the years. That particular antenna is designed for Yaesu radios, like the 857 or the 895 or 97. It can even be made to work with the 817. It actually sends the information up the coax to a little module in the bottom of the antenna to tell the motor what to do. It actually does produce reasonable SWR. Not perfectly, but, good enough for government work. You can figure you're less than 2 to 1, so it's a happy world. It's only from 40 to 10 meters as far as HF is concerned. Good luck trying to load it up on 80 because it just doesn't. It's prone to its own failures from design because the way the little module on the bottom with the FET that drives the motor and the decoder, it tends to have its problems. Sometimes it gets stupid, it goes up instead of down, little things like that. As far as being able to work a station, maybe it's the pattern, and maybe it's where it's mounted on the vehicle, but you put another manufacturer's antenna, work the same station, the same conditions, and you're much happier. So I'm going to leave it at that. K2RWK2J.
Question.
Go ahead with your question.
I'm wondering if you see...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
I was hearing him. By the way, the audio is beautiful out of 375, Eric. You've done a very good job on that RF link and setting up the audio. So he wants to know, what antenna would you use instead of the ATAS-25? Do you have a recommendation is what he really wants to know. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
All right, he didn't state his conditions. You would buy the 25 if you're going to do portable work. You're going to travel around and put up an HF antenna. There are some others. I mean, I've checked around Europe using a... now I can't remember the name of it. I think it's a DX Engineering. It's tappable. I had a little tuner box with me. And in France, I worked a lot of stations. So I'm assuming that the reason for him asking the question is because he wants to operate portable. I mean, there's much better antennas for fixed locations. But the point of the thing with the 25 is it breaks down into a nice little package, and that's the key to, you know, being light and moving.
Exactly. So you're saying that the ATS 25 may be a good, it may work, right? Correct?
I've seen it. I've seen other people use it. I'm assuming, and it's an assumption, because based on my experience with the Big Brother antenna, that they are physically the same design philosophy. Similar materials. I just happen to like the DX Engineering. There's a couple of others out there that are good, but, you know, you can't go wrong in terms of this, you know, it's only a part-time use kind of thing where you're not doing a, what do they call it? No, going off to some rare island and working your head off, because there you're going to bring some antennas with real gain. But if it's just a casual thing, sure. It's $300. It's, you know, it's just not cheap.
Wait for the beep and then go ahead with your question now, Matt.
Do we all think with a comment?
Okay, I'll do mine first. I really appreciate that. You guys are so smart. You pretty much answered my question. I also had another question about the Mars Cap mod, but I'll let the other gentleman go ahead first, so I'm listening right now.
Okay, we're going to take Rich EO with his comment, and then we're going to come back to you, Matt. Wait for the beeps, and you've got it, Rich.
Okay, Dick and Twio. What he's proposing to buy is very expensive. Way too much money. You know, I use on my car, he can put it on a tripod, but better on a car because he gets a ground plane. There's a company making, I don't know the name of the company, but he could buy them any deal. It's called Ham Sticks. Two words, H-A-M space S-T-I-X. The fiberglass antennas were very light and very inexpensive. They each cover one band at a time. On my car, when I was driving, I had three ham sticks in the back seat. And whatever band I wanted to use, what's called a bayonet base. Think I'll tell you. A bayonet base, you put the antenna on a ball mount, you, push it down, give it half a twist, and it locks. To untwist it, again, you push it down, turn it counterclockwise, and it unlocks. Very inexpensive. Well, maybe you remember, Eric, I think they're like $20 a piece. and they're very good. They're very efficient. Had no problem with them.
Eric, please tell us what you know about ham stick. Wait for the beeps. You got it, Eric.
Yeah, okay. First of all, I just went to a review site. People aren't really saying anything really bad about the 25, except that a lot of them are saying you really need a damn antenna analyzer to get the thing to resonate. A lot of people have trouble tuning it. That seems to be the biggest complaint. Ham stick, I still have them, actually, but I have my Hustlers. I like the Hustlers better. But the ham sticks are nice. You know, if you're an XCB and you happen to have a ball mount on the side of your car, it's perfect. You know, different sticks for different bands, just like the Hustlers. You know, the Hustlers are more of a hungry coil on them. You put 600 or 800 watts in the Hustler and it doesn't care. The Hustlers are ugly. The ham sticks, you know, don't de-beautify your car that much. I have a picture of the car that I had the Hustlers on. Of course, I had a big tuner in the car. Let me know you drop for a second. You know, and people would gawk at the car, so Janine eventually made a sticker that we put on a car that says, yes, I am talking to Mars. I will say this much, the ham sticks are nice. You know, the pattern that it creates being on the side of the car is different than the Hustlers, which is sticking straight up in the air and making your car actually a bit of a hazard when you go under low bridges. But not only the Hustlers seem to have been a bit more rugged, but how can you say one antenna works better than another as you're driving along and the conditions are constantly changing? So, you know, maybe I just felt like it was more rugged or something like that, and the ham sticks make you look a little bit like a CB. So, there you go. K2RIW, KE2J.
Wait for the beeps, and then go right ahead with your further questions, Matt. KA2, Papa Foxtrot, K2RIW.
2GS.
Matt first, and then Roy in that order. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, thanks. I was just wondering if anyone knew about the MarsCap mod. It basically entails in cutting a wire to add more frequencies. I don't know if it's only for receiver transmit, but I don't know if anyone's done that mod or if they think it's a good thing to do or you shouldn't do it, pertaining to many different radios. It's called the MarsCap mod. Over.
Okay, we're going to pick up Roy and then see if anyone's got any further question on that one. AC2GS, K2RIW, go ahead, Roy.
Okay, I just want to pass along a comment from K2U Rich. He's on EchoLink, but he has no microphone. He suggests that gentlemen look at Wolf River Coils. He says the website is www.wolfrivercoils.com.
Now, this is a loading coil for some other antenna. Tell us what that is, Roy. Go ahead.
I'm assuming that it's a company that makes a bottom-loaded vertical as well, you know, a shortened vertical. It's just that Richard has good opinion of that make.
Give us the site phonetically.
Whiskey Oscar Lima Foxtrot. Romeo, India, Victor, Echo, Romeo, Charlie, Oscar, India, Lima, Sierra.com.
Person, thank you.
Now, when it comes to K2UPS, Rich, he's done a hell of a lot of portable and remote site operations and QRP operations, so he's a good guy to listen to. So, by way of him being there on EchoLink, Ray, you can ask questions like you're asking, and if you get an answer from Rich, you can really believe it. KA2, Papa Papa Foxtrot, K2RIW, wait for the beeps, and you got it, Matt.
Great, thanks. That's very, very informative. I've really enjoyed listening to you guys. I think you've answered all my questions tonight. I'm really looking forward to the net. This is Matt in New Rochelle, New York, and I'm leaving it back to the net. And thank you very much, guys.
You should look at the site. It's a really cool-looking antenna.
Yeah, give us a full description of what you're looking at there, Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
It looks a little bit homemade, but it's just looks very rugged. It breaks down, so you can carry it around. They say it'll do 300 watts of sideband. Not necessarily what you need, but it looks like it's more rugged than the ATAS is. And looking at the SWR plots here, it's not too bad. It doesn't say whether you can actually tune it or not. It's pretty broad. But let's put it this way. If it's recommended it, then you've got to know it's good.
What's the approximate price of that thing, Rich? I mean, Eric.
Let me see if I can find a price for it. Give me a minute. I'll get back to you.
I think maybe somebody could look up the ham sticks. How much the prices are. I think they vary depending on the band. But I had very, very good luck with them.
AC2GS.
Glad to hear that, Rich. Go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different models. It ranges all the way from $45 for the $40 for the smallest, teeny tiniest one to about $180 for the biggest one that I could see.
I'm looking at their website. The antenna comes in a 60x4x4 shipping container, and it's $125.
Well, but there's a lot of different models.
It's the one called portable vertical. That's what you'd be dragging around with you. I mean, yeah. No, I see the other ones. Okay.
Anybody have any further questions or fills on this particular subject of mats? Give me a call. That is right now. K2RIW.
JD2FIU.
Go right ahead, George. Sorry, we kept you waiting for Don Long last week. You got it, George.
On this mobile installation, I think I want to recommend here that it's equally important to have the other half of the antenna equally as strong, because working a good mobile antenna application, you've got to have good multiple ground bonding systems in place. For example, if you're going to mount it on your trunk lip, you're going to actually have ground straps on your inside of your trunk to other parts of the body, like each fender on each side. Let me drop and come back. Center of the antenna mount, most important, is got to have a ground strap coming inward and downward to the frame of the car. There are operators I've known who have actually used ground straps and bonding their doors, their hood, everything. So if we're going to use an 84-inch, which is common for the ham sticks, which is a bottom-loaded inductor with a standard size whip, we got to have the car as an absolute grounded, solid grounded element for the other half of the wave. So all of these antennas will only perform at their max if you ground. The best grounding systems start with two good grounding straps from the portion of the car body-wise and one good grounding strap to the frame of the car from the base of the antenna. No antennas will work better than each other if you don't start with that. KD2FIU.
Somebody said comment. Who was that?
It was Matt. I'm saying you always have a chassis ground and you have the actual ground where you could actually put it into the ground. I also had a question about the MarsCap mod, but I can do that next week. We'll go on with his question, but there is two different grounds. You have a chassis ground and a ground, earth ground.
They're not RF grounds.
I think the main point that George is making is that if you're using the lip of the trunk...
Repeater, time out.
Because the trunk has that rubber ring around the perimeter, it's a floating piece of sheet metal. So if your antenna is mounted to the lip of the trunk, you have to use other kinds of grounding straps. If you're picking up a Class 3 trailer hitch, which is really connected to the frame of the car, I think you don't have any as much of a problem there. And if you're parking the car and you want to get a little bit better performance and you add an extra grounding rod, as what George is suggesting, I can think that can make an improvement. But while you're driving, of course, you can't do that. Using the sheet metal plus frame of the car as a counterpoise for the antenna when you're driving, electronically, I believe that can work well. Not everyone's going to agree with me on that one. Give me a call, let us know if you've got some further comments on this. K2RIW listening.
Finalized comment, KD2FIU, George.
Yeah, go ahead, George. Wait for the beeps.
What's important here is that the other phase of energy has got to have a good RF grounding system. It's not just an electrical grounding system in the body of the car. It's got to be all connected, incredibly solid, with the other phase of energy. You're going to have one phase of energy going into your radiator. That's all well and fine. It's going to be a good connection. But the other phase of energy has got to have a good grounding base behind it. And a lot of people don't realize that. The most successful mobile operators are going to have massive grounding straps from the side of the car to the body of the car, to the frame of the car, and some of the ones who want to run a lot of power will actually have grounding straps in their doors, in their hood and everything, in other parts of the car that are not part of where the antenna is mounted, because the RF grounding system of the other phase has got to be very, very, very conductive.
Anyone with any further questions or comments, give me your call letters.
WB2GXM.
GXM, go right ahead.
Dick, this is Whiskey Bravo 2 Golf X-Ray Mike. Another Rich. I must have doubled with N2EO at the beginning of the net. I was hoping you would have time for a quick question from me tonight. WB2GXM.
Rich, we're going to make time for you. There's only one person before you. That's Mike. And then we're going to pick you up, Rich, so hang in there. Mike is Kilo Bravo 2, Oscar, Quebec, Oscar. Go right ahead, Mike. K2RIW in the TechNet.
No questions. Thank you.
I meant to say, I think it's Kilo Delta 2, Oscar, Quebec, Oscar. You don't have a question now, Mike? Is that what you're saying?
Sorry, just a matter of a moment.
I didn't understand that. Kilo Delta 2, Oscar, Quebec, Oscar. If you've got a question, go right ahead, Mike. Okay, maybe Mike is telling us he was only listening. Rich, looks like you're number one on the runway. You didn't have to wait very long. WB2GXM, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
Thank you, Dick. K2RIW, WB2GXM. I'd like to follow up on a comment you made last week regarding balanced feed lines. I have here a nice Johnson Matchbox balance tuner and an MFJ balance tuner. I'd love to try them with a balanced feeder line. And last week you had mentioned something about putting a balancing device at the end of the feed line between the feed line and the antenna. So I was wondering what kind of balancing device would attach a balanced 450 ohm ladder line to a balanced dipole. K2RIW, WB2GXM.
When it comes to putting a ballon at the far end of the transmission line, I was recommending that might be required if the antenna is a kind of antenna that has a coaxial input connector. There, I mean, your transmitter has got a coaxial output connector. You're going through some kind of a balloning device to go between coax and the open wire line, the ladder line. At the far end of the ladder line, you might have to do it again if the antenna is a coax connector. If the antenna is a dipole, now, there's lots of different ways of feeding the dipole. If you feed the dipole in the conventional manner, in the center, and the dipole is electronically a half wavelength long, it presents an impedance of around 73 ohms. And you're about to ask a 73 ohms and 450 ohm ladder line. That sounds like about a 6-to-1 standing wave ratio. Well, because ladder line is so, let me drop. Because ladder line, under normal conditions, under good conditions, is so low in loss, the fact that it's running at a 6-to-1 standing wave ratio may not be serious. And if your antenna tuner, which is doing the balloning at the transmitter end, has enough antenna tuning range to it, that can work like a charm. There are various ways of taking 450 ohm, for instance, open wire line, and matching it to 70 ohms. There's ways you could make yourself an inductor capacitor tuning network that will give you a perfect impedance match between 450 and 73 ohms. One band at a time, it would be pretty easy. To do it on multiple bands, it's not so easy. So to build an LC tuning network, homebrew, by wrapping some 14-gauge wire on a piece of PVC pipe and putting the right kind of a transmitting capacitor across it, and now making that into an antenna tuner, at the far end, a fixed antenna tuner, 450 to 70 ohms, that's very doable. There are probably commercially made products. So you have the choice of either operating your open wire line at a 6-to-1 standing wave ratio, or correcting it at the far end if that's the way you want to feed the dipole. There are other ways to feed the dipole that will make it give you another impedance. That's another approach. So there's quite a few different ways to go here. Give me a little bit more of what you got in mind there, George. WB2GXM, K2RIW in the TechNet.
2VO commenting.
Rich first. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, I've been using open wire line to center-fed dipoles for quite a number of years. I never found it necessary to use a ballon. You need a ballon at the feed point because most tuners only will tune coax. In my shack, I have a tuner, and it goes to a 4-to-1 ballon with a very, very short piece of coax coming out of the ballon. It goes right into the 450 ohm line and up to the antenna. It works great, Dick.
So it sounds like doing it directly is not bad there, Rich, number two. WB2GXM, Rich number two, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
Thank you, Dick and Rich. Well, actually, you know, I'm going to be bringing the open wire line into the shack and attaching it directly to the balance tuner. The idea is to use the balance tuner. And I know about using a regular tuner attached to a very short length of LMR 400 or such to a 1-to-4 balanced line outside the shack, then to open wire line. Bringing it all the way in is the idea, the open wire line into the shack, and minimizing the RF coming out of it that way. WB2GXM.
Hello.
Yeah, bringing open wire line through the wall of a house is not easy. Bringing coaxial cable through the wall of a house is extremely easy. And a so-called half-wave coax ballon, which gives you a 4-to-1 impedance ratio, and it goes from unbalanced to balanced, it works so extremely well, is reasonably broadband, one band at a time, and is very inexpensive, low in loss. Putting that outside the shack is very convenient, no loss, easy to go through the wall of the house, and works very well. So don't reject that one as long as you can weatherproof that 4-to-1 half-wave coax ballon. We had at least two people who said they wanted to make a comment. one at a time. Please give me your call letters and name. K2RIW on the TechNet.
2GJE, Ed.
Okay, we got Ed, GJE, and who was the other person?
Good, Jack.
I think that was Eric. Okay, Mr. GJE, Ed, go you first. Go ahead, Ed.
If he feeds it off center, he'll make a better match. As he goes off center, the impedance will go up. Over.
That's one of the many ways of feeding a dipole. There's nothing magic about feeding the dipole in the center. It can feed it off to one side, and the impedance gets higher, as Ed just brought to our attention. Very good, Ed. KE2EJ, go ahead, Eric.
And if you're lazy and you don't feel like winding your own pieces of ferrite, there's a company called Palomar Engineering. They make all different kinds of balance. They'll do 9-to-1, 6-to-1, 4-to-1. Most of them are balanced and unbalanced, but they also make a balance. So, you know, you've got options.
Okay, so a 6-to-1 impedance ratio between 450 and 73 ohms. I think it's around 6-to-1. Yeah, that's close. A balanced version of that. Make a rough guess. A 100-watt version of that device is roughly how many dollars is your guess, Erica? Go ahead.
$3 from Rich.
Okay, somebody spoke first and then squeezed. Squeeze first, wait a second, and give us that information again.
Sorry, Eric. I already know the answer to this, and I know about Palomar Engineers. Their balance are about $30 each.
To me, that's not very expensive. That sounds like an ideal way to go. What do you think, Eric?
You don't have to be deep into your pocket, that's for sure. They make some good stuff, but, you know, you can do it yourself.
Yeah, but when you buy it from Palomar, I think it comes weatherproofed and so on. So when it comes to, if it's only $30, I can write a check and the problem goes away, as opposed to choosing all the right materials and winding and weatherproofing and so on. So, in this particular case, I wouldn't be quite so frugal. Anybody got any further comments on this one? Give me your call letters right now, K2RIW and the TechNet.
Most of that stuff isn't weatherproof. They'll sell you a box you put it in for $13.
Still a very good price from my point of view. Anybody got any further comments or questions? Wait for the beeps.
Again to Leo. As you know, we could feed it off to one side. We discussed this last week. That's called the ZEP. It was originally used in the 30s on Zeppelins, lighter than aircraft, or lighter than air. That's why they call it a ZEP.
If you feed it all the way at the open outer end, the so-called ZEP feeding position, you get something like a 2,000 ohm impedance at resonance. And so now you're getting sustaining wave ratio in the other direction. What has been suggested up till now is you don't have to feed it at the outer end. You don't have to feed it in the center. You can feed it 40% off to one side. There's a magic position you could feed the dipole off center where it gives you 450 ohms if that's what you want. You will get a little bit of common mode current on the open wire lateral line when you do it that way. I like the better idea of feeding it in the center with the ferrite balance, giving you a 6-to-1 ratio. I think that's the exotic approach. I think it's the way you should consider. But that's an opinion there, Rich number 2. WB2GXM, good question. K2RIW, go ahead, Rich number 2.
Thank you, Dick. I know we could go on about antennas for days and weeks if we wanted to, and I will stop here. Thanks for all your comments and help, gentlemen. K2RIW in the group, WB2GXM, clear.
Comment, Dick.
Eric recognized, if any of you guys carry out our suggestions and comments and whatever, please come back and let us know if it worked or didn't work. It's perfectly right to tell us that we're dead wrong. KE2EJ, K2RIW. Go ahead, Eric.
Thing I wanted to say, if you do choose to make your own, and you don't mind taking a piece of wire and threading it through a nice ferrite core, you'll find that that type of device tends to be very wideband, and if you actually measure the attenuation across the ham bands from 1.6 megahertz all the way up to 29, you find the things, if you do it right, they're pretty darn flat, and the loss is almost immeasurable. That's a good thing about doing it that way.
The person did choose to do it that way, Kirk. What article giving him a suggestion as to what chunk of ferrite to buy and how to do the bifilar winding and whatever. It would be very nice if you could point the person to an article who wants to homebrew as opposed to asking a million questions. It would be nice to read about it. Over to you, Eric.
WK2JN. If I remember, I think the antenna handbook, the AWRL antenna handbook, has a little bit of a blurb on that. And as far as what type of core, I selected mine by just going through the product sheets and see which permeabilities and what frequencies that stuff was good for. And, you know, I did my own. I made my own mistakes in the beginning and then, you know, corrected them.
Yeah, you know how to do this. You know the relationship between permeability, core saturation, flux, and so on. Inductance, perturn. You have knowledge of all that because you've done it. Picture the intimidation that a guy being faced with a magnetic device for the first time. How do I choose the one that's got how much mu, how much saturation flux, how much cross-sectional area, enough area to use large enough wire, bifilar wound, squeeze into the coil, and so on. There's a whole lot of details that will slightly intimidate a person that's not as experienced as you, Eric. So it sure would be nice if somebody has an article say, this is the way I did it and it worked. KE2EJ, if you happen to know to one of those, it would be helpful. K2RIW, you got it, Eric.
WK2J. Unfortunately, I'm not home, but I'm pretty darn sure that the antenna handbook and the AWRL radio handbook, you know, the big one, give you specific instructions on how to do it and what cords to use. And I'm sure if you do a Google search of how to build a Balun, a 6-to-1 Balun, you'll probably come up with a lot of articles. So at the moment, that's all I can suggest.
Comment?
That's a good suggestion. Person who said comment, give us your call letters and name and go right ahead. Wait for the beeps.
Dick, this is Mike number 2, Kilo 1, Mike Juliet Mike. If you Google make your own Balun or un-un, you could pick a 1-to-1, a 6-to-1, a 9-to-1, whatever you want. Just do it on Google. You'll find anything you want. It specifies what kind of toroid, what kind of, what do you call it, ferrites to buy and where to get them. Plenty of information out there, easy to do, fun to do. I have a bunch of them all over the place. Back over to you, K1MJM, we're clear.
Very good information, and I thank you, Mike number 2. Mike number 2, K1MJM, is the guy who runs the other website that supports the TechNet. And you can find his website at LimarkTechNet.com. LimarkTechNet.com. It's not TechNet, Limark, yeah. LimarkTechNet.com. That's website number 2, Mike number 2. Mike number 1 is KC2NJI, and he's at AmateurRadio.TangoVictor. AmateurRadio.TangoVictor. And there you'll find a recording for the last 11 years of TechNet. Choose the right year, the right month, the right week, and you can play back all the past TechNets. And the first 6 years or so were all cross-reference as to what subject was discussed during each 5 minutes of the TechNet. So those two websites will give you a lot of supporting additional information, graphs, photographs, articles, and so on. Alrighty, any further information on what Rich WB2GXM was asking us? Any further information, give me your call letters right now, K2RIW and TechNet. Go ahead, Rich, number 1.
Okay, all these Riches here, I'm one of them. Dick, I'm sure you remember, Barry came over to put up my antenna that I have, and you showed up, which is very, very nice of you and Barry. Maybe you want to make some comments. It's made by a company called Cobra Compact Antenna. antennas. It covers 80 through 10. I jumped the tuner out to see. It has pretty much a 4-to-1 SWR on all bands. It even covers 6 meters. Very, very nice antenna. Cobra compact antennas. It's on my house. You remember when you put it up. I thank you and Barry. Do you want to make any comments? Because you were closer to it than I.
As a fixed station antenna at your home QTH, that is one fairly nice solution. Many of the questions we had tonight are for portable operations, mobile operations, which may not be quite right. Your Cobra antenna, I think it was around $180 class. Is that true, Rich, and to EO, K2RIW?
Less than that. It was about $100. It came pre-made with 100 feet of ladder line, which I cut down. I cut it down to the length that's needed.
Okay, so a fixed antenna installation, 80 through 6 meters, for a little over $100. That worked quite well. Barry and I were involved in that installation at Rich's house, I think going on 2 years ago. So you've been using it now for 2 years, and I guess it hasn't done anything bad in that period of time. And with any further questions or comments, give me your call letters right now, K2RIW and the TechNet.
Okay, I'm not sure. I was wondering about the Mars Cap mod, if anyone knows anything about that before I do it.
Okay, so you want to know about the Mars Cap mod. Does anybody have any information on that? Give me your call letters right now.
It's M2EO.
Go ahead, Rich, number one.
Okay, well, Mars Cap stands for Mars, which is Military Affiliate Radio System, and CAP stands for Civil Air Patrol. On other frequencies, only if you're licensed to that, you cut the wire or whatever, and it'll go on those frequencies. The problem is, most people are not licensed. They cut the wire because they want to go on CB with 100 watts. A lot of these people go above the band to other frequencies, which is all strictly illegal. I would not do it because it's not needed, and it makes you suspicious looking of what you're doing. Back to net and to wheel.
AC2GS with a question.
Go ahead, Roy.
I'm assuming the guy interested in making the cuts so that they can transmit on the Mars channel frequencies are affiliated with the military radio system, with Mars itself. Is that true or not true or what?
No, actually, ex-military, and it was just maybe interested in opening up the radio for more frequencies. And I think I'm not going to do it because what the other gentleman told me is I really don't need to do that. I can use my Baofeng for if I want to use it as a scanner or whatever, and I'll transmit on my normal radios.
Mike, were you thinking of doing that modification just to be able to listen to those frequencies? Was that your intention? I think this is OQO. Go right ahead, Mike.
Matt, M-A-T-T. Yeah, just to listen. I thought it was an interesting mod to do. I find it very curious that they would limit, that a manufacturer would limit you just from one little wire, and that you could actually cut the wire to listen to more. Very, very strange. It was really interesting to me of how you could actually do a mod yourself by cutting a wire. Over.
When you study the way they set up a printed circuit board to give you control between the main tuning knob and the, let's call it the shaft encoder, the way it works. It's not too difficult to set up that board so that it only covers purely ham radio frequencies. And in the process of doing that, certain wires can get cut, and now you can tune outside of that frequency region. So the original designer of the equipment did it that way, partially because it happened by accident, and partially because it allows the equipment to be more universally usable. Let's see, two other people wanted to make comments. Eric was one of them. KE2EJ, K2IW, great Eric.
IW, KE2EJ. Well, I don't know if you're aware, most modern radios these days have little jumpers that actually access different parts of the program. To be type accepted in our land, in the United States, pass FCC muster, it has to be, the transmit side only has to be restricted. The only thing in terms of receive that's ever restricted is the cell band, but, you know, we're not talking about a radio that tunes up to 900 and a gig and beyond. The reason for that, by the way, is many of these manufacturers will make one series of radios for the military, for the ham, the ham markets in different countries, which have different band allocations. So that's the reason for the, they're usually little fodder bridges on the board. But the reality is that most modern HF receivers will tune all the frequencies you can come up with in the HF band, and VHF, UHF go beyond the ham band in terms of where you can hear, and Mars is usually just, you know, a couple of hundred kilohertz below the band or above the band. K2RW, K2J.
Thank you, Eric. I think Roy was the other person. AC2GS, go right ahead.
I hate to repeat, Eric. These radios usually receive Mars frequencies. Frequencies that aren't ham bands are locked out processor, usually with a simple short or a little diode at sensitive pins, and you snip them off, and the controller is now free to transmit on those out-of-bound frequencies. Because, you know, some people have Mars as well as amateur radio, and it's very convenient for them to do a very simple mod. So it's not a real heavy-duty electronics. You're just kind of tapping the process, giving it an indication that you want to go on the Mars channels. But if you're not Mars-affiliated, it's not legal to use those frequencies. So you can still receive the frequencies all that you want. I wouldn't suggest that you do the mod because you really shouldn't be transmitting on those frequencies unless you join Mars.
Okay, Eric and Roy, I thank you for that additional information, and hopefully that answers most of what Matt was asking. We've used up almost 2 hours of the so-called question and answer period. That's more than enough. It's time to go over to our second section of the TechNet. This is our so-called science and physics section, and Dr. Roy has always got all kinds of questions. And pretty soon after he's through, we're going to go over to the space report, and we're going to hear about the InSight beautiful spacecraft that got launched on Saturday. So, you're about to hear Science and Physics Report number 28, and go right ahead, Dr. Roy. AC2GS, K2RIW.
Okay, thank you very much, Dick. This is AC2GS, and once again, the email address to send your questions or topics that you'd like to discuss is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, that's mailbag@ac2gs.com. And for links to anything and everything that I talk about, you can go to a page that's labeled roy.ac2gs.com. Let me drop. I think tonight we're going to have a grab bag of different interesting things that I've thought of over the last week. And one of them is a little trick of probability. Now, a lot of people kind of get bored or tired of probability, but if you think about it, probability is the same as gambling, and almost everyone loves to gamble. Let me drop. So here's the problem. You have three opaque manila envelopes labeled A, B, and C. In one of those envelopes, you have a check for $1 million. In the other two envelopes, you have a check for 1 cent. They're all sealed. They're put in front of you. You chose A. I then take envelope B, open it up, and show you that there is a check for 1 penny in it. Now, I give you the option of either staying with your choice of envelope A or switching to the only remaining other envelope, envelope C. Is there any better odds by switching or by staying the same, or are they the same exact odds?
GXM?
Yes, GXM.
You're right. This question was posed in a different form a while back using DOORS. And the answer would be, stick with the original envelope, WB2GXM.
K2RIW disagrees. Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, GXM, do you think that you have better odds by staying with the original envelope, or do you think you have equivalent odds, and, you know, why bother?
KC2GS, this is Rich, WB2GXM. Actually, this involved a real TV game show, and the people who stayed with their original choice of door wound up with more than a 50% chance of winning the grand prize. WB2GXM.
Okay, Rich, so you're taking the answer as a historically based answer, I assume.
On statistical research from the TV game show, yes.
Okay, so we have one vote for Stay Pat with envelope A. We have Dick doesn't seem to be agreeing with him, but hasn't really made any definitive statement yet. Does anyone else have any other opinions of what to do?
VDH.
KD2FIU.
Yes, first VDH, then George.
Switch envelopes. Switch envelopes, good.
Okay, do you have any explanation for that behavior?
Well, based on the fact that you know that B has the 1 cent in it, I think it's slightly higher probability that the next one would have the $1 million. Go ahead.
Care to state what the probability would be?
That I don't think I'd be able to do at this point. Go ahead.
Okay, you're next, George.
I'm not going to give an answer, but I'm going to give this perception. You had a vision of one out of three, and you chose. Then you had a vision of one out of two. What would you choose? This is what we have in front of us. And this is what you got to think about. You had one out of three, you lost one out of it. You have one out of two, now you're down to 50-50. KD2FIU.
So I would construe by that that you think the odds are identical if you stay with A or you switch with this, with C. Is that what you're saying, George?
No, I'm saying you already made a choice when you went with one out of three. Now you have one out of two.
Okay, assuming what you're saying, you personally, if you wanted the best odds possible, would you trade for envelope C or would you stay pat with envelope A?
Personally, original choice.
I disagree on that one, and I'll give a point of view when you're ready.
Okay. Is there anyone out there who has any other opinions or might even want to offer what the probability of the choice might be? Please, volunteer.
I think I know the answer, sorry, but maybe state the question for other people that might be listening. KD2PBF, sorry.
Well, if you know the trick of it, then you probably shouldn't give it away, but if you have just an opinion of it, feel free to say what you think it is. But I'd rather you not kind of give me the Wikipedia entry, if you know what I mean.
No, I was just saying, say the question again for everyone to hear. I don't think some of the people understood it from the beginning, so sorry.
Okay, I'll state it again. You have three manila envelopes. They're all opaque. One is labeled A, one is labeled B, one is labeled C. Into one of the envelopes is placed a check for $1 million. Into each of the other envelopes is placed a identical check except for the amount of one penny. You then put them out in front of a person, A, B, and C. The person chooses envelope A. You then pick up envelope B, open it up, and show the person that the envelope B had a check for one penny. You then offer them the option of either staying with whatever is envelope A or switching to envelope C.
M2HVR.
Yes, Nick. Nick, you wanted to say something? See you on Echo Link, but maybe the connection's dropped or your push to talk isn't working. I don't know. I don't hear you.
Comment about Echo Link, if I could.
Yeah, sure. Comment away.
Yeah, sometimes you can either hold the space bar or press the space bar, depending on your transmission. And I guess you can program different buttons to actually do it, and different, you know, whatever to do, Echo Link, you know, from computer, mobile, whatever. But the weird thing about Echo Link is sometimes you don't hear a repeat beep. So, and I think there's also a way to program that in, but I haven't figured that out yet.
Well, apparently in Nick's case, he crashed out of Echo Link because although he was visible to me during his comment and while I was waiting for him to comment again, he disappeared from the screen. So that's what sometimes happens with Echo Link. The software crashes, but it takes a little bit of time. Oh, he just showed up back again. So, Nick, if you can transmit, please make your comment.
Okay. Well, taking the about the problem, I don't think affects what you have left. And if it's in order, A, B, and C, normally I thought I would say that you'd still have a 50-50 chance, but the laws of probability would say that I would stick with the my original choice. I'm not sure why, but I'm just going with my gut feeling. Back to Ned.
Okay, one vote for gut. Does anyone else want to have an opinion stated before Dick tells us what he thinks?
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
A couple of years ago, they had this on Mythbusters. They call it the Monty Hall dilemma, you know, because it was after that game show with the Monty Paradox. And I can't remember. I know they did it. They went through the whole thing, the percentage, but I have no idea what the, I don't remember what the answer was. But it was covered on a TV show one time. So I'm going to go with sticking with the same one. Don't remember. Back to you.
That's where I got that from, GXM.
Okay, very good. Anyone else with any opinions, one way or the other?